Osito, boom, balance. Much, much. Will we overcome our troubles? Run away from this concrete jungle. By the day, under the moonlight, my people will be alright. Burn that next light divine, and I see hope in our eyes. Africa will stand as one. I wish I all see this.
Hey buddies, it is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton and available in a craft beverage retailer of any repute near you. Head over to Land Grant Brewing Co. or sorry, just landgrantbrewing.com for more info, and the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, a 21 and up barcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. OldNorthArcade.com too. Hit it up. It is episode 242. We're recording on August the 1st. My name's Bart. And guys, I don't know about the rest of you, but does anyone else feel completely great about staring directly into the sun earlier today? Pat Murphy, you? Oh, this is great stuff. We got him.
Compelling information. Excellent, yeah. As always.
Someone muted him.
Matt, you got to unmute me, Ralph.
It's not my job. I'm not your babysitter.
Well, if you mute me, then you have to unmute me because I can't unmute myself.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, it was really cloudy where I was, so looking into the sun was not very effective, as those from the Pokemon days would say.
I did notice that, and I think that's very, very convenient. Oh boy, this big magic thing that's going to show that the sun isn't a small thing in the sky that revolves around us just happens to be obscured from view. Ralph Schudel, tell me why I'm wrong.
No. I thought it was cool. I thought it was a neat experience. You know, I'm very kind of one with the world, and I kind of always like being kind of in awe of, you know, there's something bigger than us out there, you know, so I thought it was kind of a neat experience.
A much bigger conspiracy, that's for sure. Alex Stanek, I know you've got me on this one. You didn't notice anything, the curvature of the earth or anything there with those shadows, did you?
I don't know. I'm going to have to consult with Kyrie Irving on that one, but overall, in general...
One of us!
In general, I thought that the eclipse was slightly underwhelming, much like the crew's performance this weekend, which I'm sure we will talk about shortly.
Oh, fiery hot takes.
Ooh, this is very true, and that's a good segue there right now, Alex. You might as well be handing it straight over to you, because that segue was beautiful. And we do have a lot to talk about, a maybe underwhelming or anticlimactic crew draw, but nonetheless... a draw this past Saturday. Big performance by the dude, Lawless Abubakar, who found the net for the first time with the crew's lone goal. Crew SC also had their first taste of video assistant replay, and it left a pretty underwhelming taste in their mouth. So we'll talk a little bit about some of that within the game. We'll also look elsewhere around MLS, previewing the return of Siggy Schmidt. He's coming back to the Galaxy. See what crew will look like coping with Dos Santos this Wednesday. And look at just this home game and this home stand in general and see what we want. We'll also get some of your questions. See if anyone else is, again, on the same page with us and Kyrie Irving when it comes to eclipses. Of course, always love to hear from you guys as well. Hit us up at Massive Report. Use the hashtag MRPod. But first, head back to Saturday. Pat Murphy, we actually had the chance to watch this game and really dissect it watching live. Now let's dissect it for the listeners.
Yeah, as you mentioned, between you and Alex, it was not the most exciting of Crew SC games we've seen this year. You know, the team did get a big goal from Lawless Abubakar, who's had a number of chances in the last few weeks, as he's you know, kind of developed and earned his spot in this crew back line. But you know, I think the main thing to take away from this game is they go down to Orlando and clearly set up to get a point out of the game, try and hold down the fort, so to speak, which isn't, you know, how they've traditionally done under Greg Berhalter, but has been effective as of late. You know, they were able to get just the fourth tie of the year. Fourth tie, is that right? Third tie? Third tie.
Third, I think.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's something we've talked about a lot on here is being able to grind out points when you need them. They led for a good portion of the game, so it would have been nice to see them hang on to that lead. But, you know, Orlando has quite the attacking front. So, you know, to hold them scoreless, even though they've been slumping lately, is quite a task. You know, all in all, I think it was a good point. It was not a fun game, but, you know, you take that, you come back to Columbus, and now you've got three straight at home. So, you know, we'll see. They've got Pedro Santos, who made his debut in that game, coming on in the second half. Likely a guy who will see more minutes over this home stretch. Federico Higuain didn't even make the bench in this one, as he's supposed to be back fully fit, but, you know, held out. So, yeah, I know Greg told Andrew Erickson today that they would that he expects him to play some minutes over this homestand. So, I imagine we'll see some more attacking, you know, what we've come to expect from this team over the next few games. But this game was kind of just about getting what you could get and coming home without losing too much.
And Ralph, this is a game that we saw once again, Crew FC kind of sitting back for, I believe, a third time in four games. They conceded 20 shots, just eight on target, but a lot of fouls as well for the black and gold, most notably the red card to Harrison Offal, but four additional yellow cards for Columbus, and a little bit of a concerning trend if they're going to continue sitting back like this.
Well, if you look at Orlando and how they typically play, they like to play a wide-open style, usually trying to have a build-up out of the back by using Johnson, Nocherino, or Yushimir Yutun. I think that's how you say it. But, you know, those guys, the build-up usually often comes out of the back, and, you know, they try to run Route 1 generally with Kyle Larin, Rivas, Kaká, insert whatever player that you want to there. And the fact that Crew SC were content, I like this style. I'm going to be completely frank with you guys. Is, you know, I like breaking it up vis-a-vis, dare I say it, it was very TFC to commit these fouls and kind of halt play. I think it actually worked really nicely for Crew SC and just kind of, you know, allowing them to get their composure, get back behind the ball. You know, in the humidity, guys, that's the big thing about, you know, Central Florida in the middle of August. It's not easy to run around constantly. So, you know, any break that you could take, you're, you know, going to be happy to have.
But, I mean, we look at the fouls, obviously, but the most noticeable one there, Harrison Offal. Alex, he gets the red card in the 77th minute and without a little bit of controversy around it.
Yeah, although on replay, I actually thought it was a red. I know this has kind of been a 50-50 thing for a lot of people, but I thought he raised his elbow in an unnatural way and was looking to make contact with the opposing player. And so for me, that's violent conduct. That's a red card. If it had not been Harrison and had been an Orlando player who did that to a Crew player, I would be screaming bloody murder. And so I have to kind of flip that around and say, yeah, I wasn't so upset about that. But I did think it kind of killed off the game for Crew SC in a big way. They kind of bunkered down after that, and any sort of possession we had before kind of dried up immediately. And at that point, we basically had to play for the point. And so it's good that we were able to kind of get that point. But yeah, not a great performance from most of the Crew lineup. I was impressed with Lalas Abubakar, who I talk about it a lot on this show, but I thought he had a really great game even beyond the goal. I thought he played well. I thought Stefan, for the most part, played well, although on the goal, I think maybe he could have done better. Although we can talk about that.
And it looked like he was having a hard time just handling that ball in general, dropping it a lot more than we're used to seeing him doing it fumbling, but maybe a little bit to do with that humidity, and it looked like they were watering that field inexplicably.
Yeah, it was weird, and we talked about this when we were watching the game, Bart. You know, there seemed, at least from the broadcast, to be almost puddles on the field at times, beginning of the game and beginning of the second half. And it obviously dried up during the game, and it didn't look like it was causing too many issues, but I think it certainly, you know, could be a factor. This was obviously the crew's first time playing, you know, at Orlando Stadium. They've played in Orlando, obviously, a number of times now, but, you know, Zach Steffen's first time playing down there. He played college in the Big Ten, so has obviously dealt with humidity before, but Orlando's kind of its own animal when it comes to that type of thing. So, you know, while it probably wasn't Zach's best game, I think, you know, you still like what you get from him. You know, the red card, I thought, really killed off any chance of Columbus being able to fight back. You know, they just brought in Pedro Santos, and, you know, maybe that's a sign of trying to create a little bit more offensively, you know, go for the win there. And then, you know, with 13 minutes left in the game, you're down a man and you just got to try and hold on for dear life there. You know, you don't want to get to the point where you give up a goal late in that game and you're, you know, looking at another result like in Colorado or a place like that. You know, you want to get out of there or something. So I thought that was a little disappointing. And that's not to say that for sure the crew would have thrown numbers forward. We didn't see it much in the game, but you never know what's going to happen. And, you know, Pedro Santos's debut was kind of ruined. I don't even know if he had an offer, a touch in the run of play. He was involved in that corner kick, but, you know, a little disappointing there, but, you know, again, I think a point is not the worst result.
And I want to go back to that corner kick because I think that really encapsulated what you were kind of touching on a little bit, Alex, and then what you've been touching on, Pat. But just the fact that this was really they were committed to just bunkering down and getting this one point because, you know, they're at the death more or less there. You can't imagine that Orlando's going to have any chance to really counter it there in the final minutes of stoppage time. And yet you see Greg Berhalter just go with the short corner to wait it out.
Well, it's tough to say who made that call as well. You know, I mean, that could have been the players on the field. You know, obviously they work on set pieces, so I'm assuming that they've discussed what to do in late game situations like that. But, you know, obviously I don't think you throw numbers forward at that point and try and get a corner just so you don't get counterattacked and, you know, give up a goal at the death there. But it would have been nice, I think, to at least put the ball into the box, even if there's only one or two guys up there. Maybe you get, you know, a nice bounce or something happens. You know, obviously, walking out of there with 3 points would have looked a little bit nicer in the standings. So, you know, my approach, and, you know, I think Greg Berhalter's approach in the past has been to, you know, at least give it a try. You know, put the ball in the box, see what happens. Keep numbers back. You know, maybe don't bring your center backs up just in case. You know, they do break out, but, you know, at least give it a go. But, yeah, it was a little strange. You know, this team has adopted this defensive-minded style, which, you know, people wanted to see this team play better defense, and we've seen it here. But that with that comes, you know, not taking as many risks and whatnot. And, you know, I think you saw the results this weekend.
You mentioned Pedro Santos. We got to see his debut for the black and gold, albeit, you know, not too much to actually see in their limited play. And as Ralph has pointed out for us, just 3 touches for him the entire game. We did see another, although it wasn't his debut for the new club. Dom Dwyer was one of the late additions or trade deadline acquisition for Orlando. Of course, he's made those U.S. national team debuts, and a player that, you know, you see going there to Orlando, big-time goal scorer next to Kyle Larin. But he was made more notable maybe for the mask that he was wearing and a little bit of an
and then not wearing.
He got with, yeah, and then the altercations he got in there with Waylon Francis.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because Dwyer was welcome back. For those that don't know, back in the USL days in Orlando City, Dwyer was known kind of as the poster boy for the Lions. And with the acquisition of coming back from Sporting Kansas City, was welcomed back with open arms by the Iron Lion firm. And the
just to clarify, he was on loan from Kansas City that year to Orlando, just for the so there's no confusion there.
Good catch. I put that in there to make sure you were paying attention and see if you could unmute quick enough to catch that. But anyway, you know, so he was welcomed back into Orlando with open arms following the loan spell. And, you know, he's been one of those players that really doesn't care what you think about him. And he showed that almost instantly when he came on and crashed into Zach Steffen immediately. I think it was a 50-50 fall. 50-50 ball. Most of the time, as an ex-goalkeeper, I'm going to lobby that you have to protect the goalkeeper. But then again, he wasn't done as the closing moments of the game came. Tried a bicycle kick and about knocked Josh Williams into next week by glancing. It didn't look like he got full contact, but he got the boot high enough where he got a piece of Josh Williams. And I'm frankly quite shocked about how he was able to remain in the game. I actually got a lot of questions from supporters how that was in a video review, and they basically just won't Major League Soccer won't take a look at it unless it's a situation that might be a card. But you know, it was puzzling how he remained in the game. But you know, did you guys see Kaká at all during the game? I just want to what he did?
Well, yeah, oh, he was up there, up in the lads for sure there for Orlando.
At least for the first half. I don't know. They stopped showing him in the second.
And you mentioned Dom Dwyer, you know, at showing that he didn't care what people thought of him with that quick early hit there on Zach Steffen. I'd argue he showed it when he came onto the field looking like a B&M or S&M Rip Hamilton. That mask was ridiculous.
Yeah, you see this in the NBA, and it's commonplace usually in the NBA, but, you know, when you get a pretty boy surgery, or as our colleague Alex Steck called a nose job, the whole purpose of the mask is to protect your nose. You know, that pretty little face, you know, you take a nice little header off of it, you know, you're going to ruin the $80,000 that he probably paid. I know that's chump change considering he's making a good amount of money, but yeah, bud, you got to protect that that moneymaker because, you know, your soccer career is not going to last long if you keep fouling crew players like that.
I just really hate. I really hate Dom Dwyer. Like, I just hate him. And he's a U.S. national teamer, which really sucks, but he's one of these U.S. national team players.
Look at all the U.S. national team players. Yeah.
I wish.
Look at Jermaine Jones.
I wish they would not call him up. Yeah, Jermaine Jones is another one. I had a phase where I hated Bradley like this too. I mean, there are just players that irritate me, and Dom Dwyer just irritates me, which is really frustrating because Sydney Leroux is one of my all-time favorite U.S. Mm-hmm. women's national team players.
Why do you like Sydney Leroux, Alex?
Because Sydney Leroux is just a hardworking, awesome player, and she is the most entertaining sports figure on social media.
Can I defend Alex real quick? Okay, I've actually had conversations with Sydney Leroux when I was in Chicago for CONCACAF qualifying. One of the nicest people I've had the pleasure of talking to.
Yeah, she's nice. Easy on the eyes too. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know what to say.
I don't know. How do we segue this?
Well, I guess I have to address this now by saying that I think my obsession with Kristen Press is well known and established at this point. I have my Press jersey in the closet over there and wear it every time the U.S. women play. She's my woman crush Wednesday. Is that what the kids call it these days? Whatever. Something like that.
One of those.
Yeah.
Now, Alex, if you had known that Kaká was going to be out in the supporters section for Orlando, would you have bought tickets to this game and traveled down and faked as a Disney Lion, whatever their supporter group is called?
A Disney Lion Ultra? I'm not sure. I would have had to think about it, Bart. You know, that's a tough one. No, I mean, I don't know how many people know, but I stalked Kaká at the team hotel 2 years ago and got him to sign my 2003 AC Milan Kaká shirt, and so I no longer need to meet him. I've checked that one off the bucket list, and so I would go to Orlando and I would cheer for the Columbus Crew SC soccer team. So
did you really do that?
I absolutely went to the team hotel and met Kaká 110%.
Oh my god!
I did not know that.
He was hanging out downtown. I bumped into him with my jersey.
Bumped into him.
Because I went there specifically to meet him. Yeah. It was awesome. He is one of the nicest guys ever, and he took pictures with all – there were a number of fans there. Took pictures with everybody, signed everybody's stuff. We kind of talked a little bit, but it's cool with these players that come to MLS because I think they understand when they come here that part of the job is to kind of promote the league and promote their team and promote the sport here. And so it's kind of that European connection, but he was one of my all-time heroes growing up, so to meet him was a real treat.
I know I'm going to make you angry when I say this, but a player that I've always wanted to meet in that context is Andrea Pirlo, and I know you're going to get real angry here in about
a second. I met him, too.
Oh, okay.
I got his signed shirt in the closet, too.
Conveniently. And while we're on the subject of women's national team players, I have to say Julie Johnston / Julie Ernst, but, you know, that's just me, too. So, also another red star.
Yeah. Well, I want to go back to Kaká, you know, out in the stands a little bit for a somewhat serious question there. And you touched on it a bit there, Alex, that it is a little bit of a kind of gimmick when you come to the MLS, or at least some of the transitions you have to make, some of the stuff that you have to do as a player to push the, you know, plug the team and promote the team that they might not be used to in Europe. But to see a player out there, you know, in the supporter section, not really engaged in the game or anything. I mean, when they'd cut to Kaká, you know, there he'd be laughing as his team's trailing or not really paying attention and stuff and having fun with fans, and rightfully so. But if you're Jason Kreis, are you a little bit concerned about that? Or is it that, you know, Kaká is that? I think we all recognize he's probably not coming back next season to Orlando, but that he's that checked out?
I don't even think he's checked out. I mean, we see this in Columbus, to be fair. I mean, Brad Stuver was in Nordeca earlier this season, I believe. Frankie Hayduk was in Nordeca from time to time when he was a player. I think Duncan was in there once or twice as well. Hesmer, maybe? I can't remember. Patrick would probably know. Murph would know more than I do. But, yeah. I don't think it's a bad thing, and I think it's totally normal for the most part.
I think it's interesting when players choose to do that because, I mean, it's obviously a cool experience for the fans to kind of get to interact with these guys during the game. Like, you get to see them in a much more social, you know, setting than, you know, team events and things like that. But, you know, it does give a certain look. You know, Bart, we talked about this. You know, Kaká kind of just, I don't know. I mean, obviously he's there to have fun, but yeah, you're right. His team's losing most of the game. Now, to be fair, the Orlando fans seem to be enjoying themselves quite a bit as well. You know, they didn't seem to be as concerned. So maybe it was just kind of the group he was in. You know, but if he's sitting in a box, you know, eating and whatnot, and, you know, who knows how much he's paying attention there either. So I don't think it sends, you know, necessarily a bad message. It is a little weird, but, you know, I think for the Orlando fans, it's a cool experience, just like it was when, you know, when Alex mentioned when players would come into this section at Mafre. And, you know, I think, frankly, it's something guys should consider doing more often. Obviously, it's a personal decision what you're going to do during that game. But, you know, to have a guy like that just kind of hanging out, you don't see that very often, especially a guy like Kaká, someone of that stature.
I have a couple thoughts on this. So, number one, and I'm going to be the killjoy to the Kaká in the wall conversation. You know, he's an influential leader on the team, and I think, you know, he needs to be in a dressing room suite or something like that at least during the game. That way he could be 100% focused, hanging out with the guys that didn't dress for the game, you know, maybe like a Dylan Power. I know Dylan Power's dressed, that's a terrible example, but you know, he just needs to be there and just watch the game with his teammates. And I like the idea of being in the Iron Lion firm with him, or the wall, or whatever the heck they call it down there. But
the small world, I believe.
The small world, yeah, where they chain people up to the wall and they don't let them out because they have to boost attendance numbers. But anyway, you know, and then in Columbus, in relative terms of that, I'm debating how I want to phrase this because I could see this getting a lot of flack, but I don't see your Justin Miriams, I don't see, you know, your Higuaín's maybe coming over to the corner out of fear for how fans might simply react, because, you know, the saying that everybody has out there is, you know, nobody hates us quite like we hate us. And of course there will be fans that will embrace, you know, them coming over the corner, but, you know, how many fans might go rogue and, you know, hey dude, you tweeted something at me, you know, a couple weeks ago or something like that. I mean, I know Miriam kind of keeps tabs on Twitter and a couple other people like that, but, you know, you get, you mix people in there, you get alcohol involved, you know, somebody says something to them, you know, and then boom, it's ruined, you know, forever. You know,
no, not in the Nordeca. That I can't imagine ever happening.
Well, and I think that, you know, situations like that, you know, people obviously have courage behind a keyboard, but, you know, if Justin Merrim comes and sits in the section, you know, just to continue the thread there, you know, I don't think fans are going to give him a hard time. You know, I think it's a lot easier to tweet at somebody than it is to actually say something to someone's face. Now, you're right, people start drinking a little bit or whatnot, maybe, but, you know, I mean, I think, and Alex, you probably know better than I would, but, you know, given the times that guys have done it before, I think it's all gone pretty well. You know, I think people understand how to act when they're around these guys, even if, you know, they're not the not the biggest fans of them, you know, when they're not face to face.
Okay, so I'm gonna take all of the trouble that Ralph was gonna get and just direct it all at myself by saying the following. The people who complain the most on Twitter, you do not see them at the stadium. They don't go to games. They are not going to be in a position where they can bump into one of these guys and say something mean. They are not those fans.
Would you like to name names?
I don't want to, but there are these are the same fans who say, oh, well, I'm not going to buy any more tickets until we're good again. And then it's like, okay, well, you never showed up anyway, so that's fine. You know, you can grandstand about that all you want. I haven't seen you in 2 years, so that's okay. That's the kind of stuff that you see online. And I think the thing about Twitter and Facebook is, in general, it's the guys who have the hottest takes and scream the loudest get the most attention. And so it seems like everybody's kind of on that bandwagon, but really it's a handful of guys who are never going to be happy. I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think we could go out and sign Cristiano Ronaldo tomorrow, and the same people who are complaining right now would be on Twitter 15 minutes after we announced Ronaldo saying, why did we waste all this money on a guy who's past it? Why didn't we go out and sign Messi? This is such a waste of time and money, blah, blah, blah. That's kind of the way that small group is, but it's not the bigger group. Every time I've seen a player in Nordeca, it's been amazing. People have come over and said hi to him, you know, thanked him for being in the section, and it's been a great experience.
It certainly was, and at least a little bit concerning, maybe for Columbus on a couple other accounts. When you look at the injuries, some of the players that didn't get to show up because of injuries, and of course Arthur, most notably the late removal from the lineup with a thigh injury. I'm reading here on Twitter, and it just says Andrew Erickson has just released his questionables the Crew SC questionables for Wednesday. Arthur listed among them. A bit of a concern for this team, or is this actually a guy who maybe went overlooked with a surprisingly solid outing in Abu last Saturday?
I thought Abu played one of his better games quietly. I think that, you know, he's taken a lot of flack both here and other places for his performances this year. And he came out and I thought played well, you know, didn't do anything, you know, offensively incredible, but was solid in the center of the midfield. With that said, you can see the difference when this team doesn't have two guys. And I think those two guys are Arthur and Federico Higuain. You know, for different reasons, obviously, Arthur kind of breaks things up in the midfield and, you know, just allows other guys to kind of move around. And Federico, obviously, is the attacking spark. But, you know, not having either of them on the field, I think you saw, you know, that lack of creativity, that lack of, you know, want to going forward and whatnot. You know, I think that, yeah, like I said, this team is a lot better when those guys are on the field, or at least one of them. You know, so hopefully, for the team's sake, they can get Arthur back, because obviously they're playing a team with a fairly potent midfield in LA who have been pretty good on the road. So I think you know, that would be a big get back And it's interesting because Artur trained, you know, at what at least seemed like full all week. So it was a surprise to us that he'd been dealing with the injury. But, you know, hopefully that means it's not so serious.
Yeah, I thought Abu played well. When you look at the passing stats, he had, let me see if I can pull up the number again, 94.7% pass completion, just over 12% higher than our next highest midfielder, which was Will Trapp at 82.4. So he put in a really good performance, I thought. But again, consistency is going to be important for him. And if he can put in performances like this, you know, one after the other, I think then he might have a spot on this roster long term. But he's got to keep performing like this. We can't have any of those games from earlier on in the season where he really didn't deliver. But it was a good performance this weekend.
And I think you could almost characterize another player with that the same way in Waylon Francis, another guy we kind of maybe overlooked again, but and who we've certainly been looking for consistency between performances. But consecutive games now where he's gotten assists, the ball that he played there to Lawless Abubakar was absolutely gorgeous. And what would it mean for this team to get a Waylon Francis back contributing at the level that he is capable of?
It's a great thing for this team. Oh, sorry. It's a great thing, you know, because you've had traditionally with Harrison Offal and Waylon Francis, and when this team had a 1-2 punch of Offal and Francis back in 2015, this offense was amazing. And, you know, you've had, I'm sorry to say this, Harrison Offal kind of disappear and fall off the radar a little bit because he's had a tough year, albeit with injuries, red cards, you know, insert whatever issue. But, you know, with Francis, he's had kind of a renaissance of sorts after missing most of last year with the shoulder ailment. And, you know, I think he's starting to get the praise. But not only that, I would dare say he's playing better than 2015.
I think he played well in this game. I still think it was a step down from what we saw last weekend. I thought that, you know, Bart, you mentioned the free kick. You know, obviously that set up the goal, gets him another assist. But, you know, I didn't, you know, just with the way they played, you know, the fullbacks weren't as involved offensively, except when Harrison Offal was inexplicably offside, which should never happen. Yeah. You know, there just wasn't enough offensively for me to really judge. And with three center backs, these guys aren't having to do as much defensively. So, you know, it was a fine game in my book for Waylon, enough to probably, you know, keep him in the starting lineup for me. We'll see how much squad rotation there is given the three games in 8 days. But, you know, I think he's kind of cemented that spot for the time being. But, you know, I didn't think it was a, you know, over the top great performance like I thought he did on last weekend.
Looking, you mentioned that squad rotation, Pat, and with the short week, with the injuries now, when you look at it, and this is what they're going to be playing, I believe, 3 games in 8 days, right?
Yep. Yeah,
so three games in 8 days, and suddenly you've got Higuain, of course, who's been nursing injuries for a while, but both Mane and Artur now that have injuries that look to at least have landed them questionable for Wednesday. And recognizing that you've got all these games in such a compressed amount of time, but they're home games, especially against LA, as we'll touch on, a team that's very strong on the road. But what do you think the lineup and the rotation is going to look like as they're continuing, they're really putting the depth to the test for this team?
Yeah, I think that might have been in the mind of Greg Berhalter going to this game. Just, you know, obviously this is a road game. The next two of this stretch are at home. Western Conference opposition, which, you know, doesn't give you that necessarily 6-point swing, but you can get a win that still counts as 3 points. So, you know, potentially with a guy like Higuain, for instance, who's been back in full training and seemed to look good, assuming there was no, you know, new development with his knee, you know, I imagine maybe they were thinking, hey, we can get a few more days rest for him before throwing him out there on Wednesday. You know, Kakuta Mane will obviously have to see Artur. you know, maybe the same thing. I know he traveled down there, so it was possible that he could have played in that game. Yeah, I think you'll see some lineup adjustments. They've proven that they have some depth at some key positions. It wouldn't surprise me if you see Pedro Santos start in one of these games. You know, maybe Wednesday, depending on how he came out of this game after not training most of last week. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, I think, you know, you have to go into these next two looking for 6 points, I think. You know, and that has to come into play when you're setting up a lineup.
And with this, I mean, looking at that game Wednesday, if we want to, you know, hop ahead a little bit, I guess we can also look elsewhere around the league. But LA, it's a huge game, a huge home game coming up, and a homecoming for Ziggy Schmidt. Obviously not the first time, but Crew FC fans, it's always, it feels a little bit different. It's still odd, I think, even after all these years, looking at the opposing sideline and seeing Ziggy there.
Yeah, it is, just because of what he was able to do here. You know, when he went out to LA, or when he went out to Seattle, sorry, you know, coming back each time. I know Columbus has held a special place in his heart, but just after the few years of playing out there, or playing, coaching here, excuse me, and, you know, what he managed to accomplish, I think it is always strange, not only for him, but for the fans. You know, just come back to a place that has some special memories, and, you know, for him and for everyone else. So, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see him back, especially a guy who, you know, got fired last year, is back with the Galaxy where he got, you know, his career going as a professional head coach. So, yeah, and this is obviously a game that they would like to try and start turning things around, because despite their record on the road being, you know, what it is, I think 5 wins and 5 losses, which is the best in the league, you know, they haven't been good at home, and, you know, are very much sitting on the outside of the playoff hunt in the Western Conference.
I look at this game very much as kind of a nice test as to where Crew FC is, because they're going to be going against LA with, you know, it's not your Robbie Keane, Landon Donovan, Steven Gerrard, LA Galaxy. I don't think Gerrard actually made a trip out to Columbus, now that I think about it. But, you know, it's you always get the big names with LA. So now it's changed to, you know, Alessandrini, Boateng, the two Dos Santos. You know, and to see Crew SC play against these guys, I think it's going to be great, because I'm not buying that Arturs is hurt, as they say he is. You know, I really am looking forward to a nice matchup in the midfield with Artur. I was looking forward to Jermaine Jones, but I just found out he's out for Wednesday's clash for LA. It looks like he's got a little toe issue. So, Alex, you can't boo him on Wednesday. I'm sorry.
You can't see me. I'm playing the world's smallest violin.
I can boo him whether he's there or not. Don't tell me that I can.
Oh, yeah.
That's great radio, too, Bart, by playing the world's smallest violin. It's great radio. But, you know, and it's like Pat said, you know, you can't figure out what this team's about, because, like we've touched on numerous times on this program, that traditionally Major League Soccer teams don't do well outside of their home confines. But for LA, it's been, you know, they're 5-5-1 away from StubHub. They're 1-7-4 in their own home confines. I mean, can you put the shoe on the other foot and imagine if it was reversed for QSC and they were 1-7-4 in Mafre? I mean, people would be rioting. But
people are rioting anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's going to be a tough matchup. They're still very talented. And I think it's going to be a good show on Wednesday.
It's certainly going to be, and of course, you look at those attacking players that they have added in guys like the other Dos Santos. Which one? Jonathan was the one that they added, right? Or Giovanni?
They had Giovanni as
Jonathan.
The attacker. Jonathan's
the
midfielder.
Jonathan, yep. So, yeah, add both of them. And, of course, A team that always it's always a big deal when LA comes into town. I remember the old Blackout the Galaxy games and everything. And a Wednesday night in Columbus, it'll be an interesting test for this Columbus team, because I can see how it would be easy, maybe not to get as much up for this game, because it's a Wednesday, because it's in the middle of a whole bunch of games here and there. You've got the injuries, you've got a different, you know, group that might be rotating in here. But these are points that Columbus needs.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think, you know, like I said before, it doesn't have a 6-point swing of an Eastern Conference game, but, you know, you've got to take care of your points at home. Just, you know, looking ahead, I think that they've got, after this home stretch, you know, there's some difficult away games coming, especially the last two games of the season. You know, you don't want to be in a point there where you're trying to, you know, make up points on the road because you didn't take advantage of this game of Dallas, you know, trying to get something against Sporting Kansas City. You know, not to look too far ahead, but Dallas has struggled of late, so that's a winnable game, I think, at home. You know, we talked about LA's success on the road, but, you know, still a team that I think is really trying to figure itself out. And while they do have a lot of talent, I don't think you want that to kind of materialize in your stadium. You know, especially, you know, you hope to get Higuain back. You have a new designated player. You're probably debuting for the first time in one of these games against the home fans. So, you know, I think these are important games. You know, any of the home games in MLS are going to be important. But when you can have these stretches where you can go on a bit of a run, you know, we've talked about what teams can do over the final 10 games of the season. You know, Columbus started with the win against Chicago. Now got a draw on the road. Okay, you have three at home. What can you do here to kind of keep that momentum going as you build towards the playoffs?
I think this is a very important game. It's going to be a really tough game. The Dos Santos brothers scare the crap out of me, to be honest with you. I think they have the ability to take advantage of defensive mistakes that Columbus make from time to time. And it will present a real challenge for our midfield and for our defensive back line. It's going to be really tough, but like Murph said, this is a very important game, and we really need to get out of this thing with some sort of a result. Just to prevent us from getting in a hole that might be very difficult to dig out of. So hopefully we can make something happen. But, yeah, this is a big test, a very big test.
How many points do you think, Alex, out of curiosity, would you need to consider this a successful homestand?
I don't even know. It's so hard to say at this stage in the season. You just want to get as many points as you possibly can. And then hope that you can get decent results on the road to close out the season, but there's so many variables in it right now that I'm not sure. I mean, obviously you want to win all of your home games. You want to win your home games and try to get draws on the road, but this one in particular I think is going to be very, very difficult. The way these two teams match up is going to really present some challenges. I think we're going to see three at the back again just to try to close down that space for the Dos Santos brothers, but other than that, I'm really not sure. It's going to be very, very difficult.
Well, and you mentioned the three in the back, and I think that's the most interesting thing going forward here, because obviously that's been successful more often than not, I think. The team's been improved defensively. The results have been there. But how do you know, if you have a healthy Higuain, you have Pedro Santos, you're going to start. Justin Merrim obviously has his spot locked in. You know, how do you get those three guys on the field if you're playing three in the back? You know, do you play do you go Pep Guardiola and play an attacking midfielder at fullback or wingback? I look at it, and the only thing that I can think of is that you have to go back to the four in the back and hope that you can be a little bit better defensively than you were earlier in the year. And with these three attacking guys up top along with Ola Kamara, just try and outscore teams if you want to get all of them on the field together.
Well, I guess that bodes asks another question, and one that we've gotten here on Twitter as well, related to one Nico Ness. This is at Sean Bolts 04. Why is Ness not considered currently? And so that's a player, again, that you'd look at, especially in the shortened week with how much Greg Berhalter has been relying on that trio of, Williams there between Jonathan and Lawless Abubakar. It could be an opportunity to see both Nico Nes and perhaps Alex Krenali again.
So I have a theory about this, and I'm going to put on my tin hat because I feel like some people share this with me, others may not. And in the four in the back system, I think it really exposes Jonathan Mensah for, because it puts a tremendous amount of pressure on those two center backs as the wing backs try to get forward. And Nico Nes seems to thrive. When you go to this three in the back system, I feel like it's vice versa. I feel like Jonathan Mensah really succeeds in this three in the back system, and unfortunately Nico Ness's play begins to suffer. As I was discussing with Nathaniel Marhefka on Saturday night during the match, I feel as if maybe in this absence of Artur, that Crew SC, stumbling over my words, could put Ness up in the defensive midfield, maybe alongside of Will Trapp, and work as a distributor to get the ball up the pitch a little bit easier. But I think it's just each of the systems, when you go to the three in the back just suits Mensah a little bit better, and I think Nico's got to sit on the bench, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I think that's an option. I don't think it's one that they're... I think Nico has been deemed out of form, and I think we've seen that given, you know, he's played... You know, in two games in the last six, both of those were starts, to be fair, but, you know, games where they gave up multiple goals in each. You know, I think we saw, you know, Nico could have played in the midfield on Saturday. He was on the bench. Instead, they went with Mohamed Abu. He's just, for whatever reason, not in form. You know, even when he's been out there, the passes haven't been the same. Defensively, he hasn't been as solid. You know, the confidence, and we talked about this, I think, last week or the week before, the confidence just doesn't seem to be there for him. And, you know, it's unfortunate because I think he's a really good player. And, you know, maybe with squad rotation, maybe they do get him in there at one of these positions. But, yeah, it's a weird one because he was playing so well early in the season. And, you know, it was quite the drop-off all of a sudden.
I would be curious to see him tried out in defensive mid again. With Artur's injury, I think that would be an interesting option. I do think, and I've been thinking about this since you mentioned it, Murph, about how you could make it work formation-wise with a 3-5-2 without switching back with Pedro Santos. And I think that the system that you would see in a situation like that, and this is not going to be something that a lot of Crew fans are going to like, but you could potentially see Merrim seeing the bench. I think you could see two strikers up front, probably Pedro Santos slightly behind Ola Kamara, and then a midfield of Higuain, Trapp, Artur, and then the two wing backs defensively, and then three center backs. That's the only way I could really see it working, is if you had Santos maybe off, you know, off to the right a little bit and more of in like a number 10 role, slightly off center. And then Higuain maybe as like a center mid slash number 10 that would kind of dart up to the left into sort of a triangle in the attack. That's the only thing I can really think of. Other than that, I think you're right. I think you have to go back to four in the back. But I think with four in the back, this team is vulnerable. I think this team is vulnerable to defensive mistakes. And I think having that fifth defender really solidifies the system in a big way and provides that opportunity to get forward and get a winning goal.
Well, here's a question for you. You know, if you're going to at least try the four in the back, you know, is this the time to do it? When you've got this homestand, you know, you're playing a team in LA who, I'm pulling it up here, has not been great offensively, I don't believe. You know, 32 goals through 22 games, which is about middle of the road, so I guess they're better than I thought. But, you know, it's not a team that you're super worried about offensively. You've got Dallas coming in, who's right about the same place with 33 goals scored. And then Kansas City, who doesn't score goals at all. They have 19 on the season. You know, so maybe this is the time when you try the four in the back and see if you can get something going there. I don't know. I think it's very interesting. I asked Greg about it last week, and he kind of dodged the question, joked about what they did against Toronto, where they played Will in there with a bunch of attacking midfielders and how that didn't work. but, you know, never really answered the question. He said he's excited for the depth that they'll have and things like that. But, you know, obviously Greg keeps these things tight to the vest, so I didn't expect a really good answer. But, yeah, I'm very interested to see going forward how this is going to work, because, you know, you didn't bring Pedro here to not play, not start. Obviously, I think while Higuain remains here, you start him, Justin Merrim, obviously. So, I don't know. It'll certainly be something to keep an eye on going forward.
I think it would be a mistake, although I think it's quite possible that that's what happens. But Gio Dos Santos, especially, his characteristics as a player, I think he could really exploit any sort of mistake made by our defense. And I think with four in the back, we just make mistakes. And you get an attacking player behind one of the wing backs, and it's over. I mean, there's nothing that they can do. It's a straight sprint down the wing and a square ball into the middle, and it's a clean finish. So I hope that we'll go with three in the back, simply because I do think this is, if not a must win, it's a must get a point game at the very least. And I could see us losing this thing with four in the back system. I would love to be wrong, though.
Yeah, that's not the time that we don't want to be the ones that are responsible for getting Yossi Zardes hot again.
Speaking of new national team players that I assume Alex doesn't like.
I like Zardes, actually.
Oh, all right. Well, take that back then.
Well, and you look at him, just one goal on the no goals on the campaign. It's pretty nuts to see that. But he's a player who's, you know, one of the big talents that the league's promoted. I'm sure if he had a goal, he would have been in the All-Star game in lieu of another Crew SC player, maybe, you know, to take away from one of the Chicago players. But still a dangerous force that you have to account for any time he's on the field, even if he's not scoring.
Well, he's had injury problems, if I'm not mistaken, this year, so he's had kind of a rough go in trying to get in the swing of things. But you're right, Bart, 100%. He's somebody that you need to account for. And, you know, like Alex said a little bit earlier, is this team's scary, because you're looking at the two DeSantoses, you're looking at Roman Alessandrini. You know, there's a lot of moving parts to the game plan for.
Now, in contrast, speaking of wingers who maybe haven't produced but actually did produce recently, Ethan Finley getting a goal in his first game for Minnesota. He now has more goals than Pedro Santos does in the same amount of games appeared for their respective new teams. Is it safe to say that Crew SC made the wrong decision on this one?
You had to go there, didn't you?
I think that is the exact reaction you should take to this. No, it was nice to see Ethan get out there. They talked about on the broadcast how, you know, he's talked about since, you know, the short time since moving to Minnesota that, you know, it's been tough for him to find a rhythm. And, you know, with the way he, you know, this year and at points last year when he was in and out of the lineup and on the bench, you know, making spot duty appearances and things like that, I can imagine that a guy like him, you know, who is already struggling to find form scoring-wise, had some issues. And, you know, he gets a full week of training on a new team, gets involved in the game offensively, and, you know, is able to tuck one home. You know, it's the type of finishes he was having those chances here and just wasn't, you know, whatever it was not finding the back of the net. So good to see him score. You know, as we talked about when the trade happened, Ethan's a great guy. I hope he does well in Minnesota. Obviously, they lost that game, but, you know, out in Seattle, tough place to play. Another former Crew player, Chad Marshall, also scoring in that game. So cool to kind of see those guys getting on the board for other teams if you aren't sad about them leaving, I guess.
Wasn't it weird to see him line up in a different colored shirt other than black and gold, though? That was a big mental thing I had to get past.
The weirdest part for me was, like, after the goal, like, the celebration, like, it was very clear that he just doesn't know these guys that well. Like, having watched him celebrate with these Crew guys the past, you know, several years, obviously they've got celebrations they do. You know, just seeing him a part of those celebrations, not even necessarily when he scored. Like, he just kind of ran to the corner and, like, turned around, and the guys kind of came over and hugged him. And I think Cronin was the only one who, like, grabbed his head and, like, said something to him. But it just, you know, it's clear that they haven't had the chance yet, and rightfully so. He's only been there a little over a week to kind of build any sort of camaraderie and whatnot. But like I said, good to see him find the back of the net.
It's actually weirder for me to see Chad Marshall in a Seattle Sounders shirt
It is still weird. Yeah,
than
I agree.
It is to see Ethan Finley in a Minnesota shirt. I kind of expected Ethan to go to Minnesota at some point in his career, just because it is kind of his hometown team. But I still cannot picture Chad Marshall in a Sounders shirt. And he's been there for years. But it still freaks me out every time I see him. I'm like, this is not right. What is going on? Why is he wearing this green shirt? It's terrible. I'm tempted to start a bring back Chad Marshall movement, but I don't even think I'm going to go there. I think that's too much even for me.
I think we're overlooking, I think, the player that was probably hardest to see in a different jersey over the weekend, and that was, of course, Dilly Duca dressing for New York Red Bulls.
Yeah, nice 2-0 loss for the Red Bulls there. I watched some of that game, actually, and I didn't realize Dilly was on the field for most of the time. No offense to Dilly, but New York was not good for at least the part of the game I watched.
You guys know who I miss the most is Bernardo Anor. I haven't been able to see that guy in several years.
Oh.
Well, I'm just happy that Dilly got to go back to his hometown, New Jersey Red Bulls. That just makes me very happy. So,
I wish Stern John were still on the crew.
Oh, man. Stern John was the girl. Like, do we even appreciate how dominant he was?
No, absolutely not.
It is crazy. I saw, like, some stats over the weekend that he, like, those 40-some goals, and he only played, like, 50 games.
Yep. He
it was a different league back then, though.
The Stern turn, man.
Still, yeah, oh no, he was a freak.
It was impressive.
He was so good. Ah, well. You know what else is so good, guys? I'm talking, of course, about our sponsors. They are incredible, both of them. Land Grant Brewing Company at 424 West Town Street in East Franklinton. Also online at landgrantbrewing.com. And the Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street, or www.oldnortharcade.com.
Does anybody know why they still give us money, though?
I've yet to see any of this money, Ralph, so you...
Oh, you're right. Yeah. The front office pays us. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. We get our checks cashed or written directly by Tony Aces, so we will go and just put all this club spin out and obfuscate the truth, which is that the club is in disarray. They're actually in the midst of the worst season in team history, and Greg Berhalter was the Zodiac Killer. It's just, there's nothing, that's the truth out there, but now we're going to get that cut off, and now our sweet, sweet money that comes from Tony Aces is going to be gone.
Oh, God, what am I going to do? See, I can't spend it in the gear shop anymore.
I don't even want money, I just want a crew SC fidget spinner. Like, is that too much to ask for? I want one of the yellow ones, not the black ones, I want the yellow.
I just want a crew SC, like a new one of those things that you can stick on the back of your cell phone to hold like a credit card and that kind of stuff.
Oh my god, I hate those things.
You mean like this one?
Yeah, I've got. Oh, can I have that, Pat?
You guys have.
Yeah, you can have it. It's just.
Aren't you afraid you're gonna lose your cards when you go out somewhere?
No, because I'm terrified of my phone.
That's like people who have the cases that have their cards in them, and I'm like, dude, my luck, it's gonna fall out, and everything's gonna go all over the counter.
I'm with Ralph. Bad idea.
Well,
bad idea, like playing four at the back against L.A.
Oh, good one. Speaking of L.A., we got to get some picks in here before we wrap it up. We'll go to Pat Murphy first for his pick.
3-1 Crew SC. I'm not sure how they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to. By that, I mean get these guys on the field formation-wise. I don't know what that's going to look like, but... from what I've watched of LA, and it's been a little while since I've watched some of their games, but I think this is a team that's struggling. Like we talked about earlier, they've been good on the road by MLS standards, but I think they come in here. I think Columbus looks to be a little more offensive, change things up a little bit from recent games, and gets a good 3-1 score and puts in a good performance on top of it.
3-1 from Patrick Murphy. Ralph Shadell, what do you think?
I don't feel good about this game. I'm going to level with you guys. You throw a record out when you play L. So capable of some pretty cool things. That being said, I'm going to a 2-1 USC victory.
2-1.
Well, that was unexpected.
Yeah, that was a nice little,
swerve.
Switch.
Swerve.
All right. Alex Stana, can we make it a clean sweep here?
It's going to be a 2-0 victory, and they're going to do the 3-5 crew.
Ooh. 3-5 crew. Yep. Nothing else? No one else that might make a surprise appearance?
Abubakar keep scoring streak alive.
Yeah.
No, Falcao is on a yacht right now. He's not coming.
Okay. Well,
he's on vacation. Is he with Diego Costa?
Hanging
out in Brazil, not playing for his team.
I have no idea.
Getting fined more money than I've ever made weekly.
They've got. No, they're fine. It's okay.
And then, for what it's worth, I will also go with the Crew SC victory. I'm going to go with 3-2. I'm not quite as bullish on Crew SC, at least taking care of business in their own end. I think they'll take care of business. I don't think they won't concede a couple goals, though. But they're just too dominant offensively right now after, you know, being outshot by a 2-1 margin last game, that I think they're going to be able to come back, get that big 2-0 victory. So we got everything else. I don't even know why you need to bother to go to this game Wednesday, because you know here from all of us with authority that Crew SC will win, but you should still head out there. Guys, any good parting shots before then?
I just want to list my most hated U.S. national team
telling people
players.
Not.
Let's get that. Let's get it. The official Alex Stanics.
Nope.